This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And on the day one legendary Philadelphia sports career comes to an end, another gets prolonged. We are here to offset the bittersweet sadness of Jason Kelce's farewell from football and the Philadelphia Eagles with a not really emergency podcast, because we can't really pull that off. Our emergencies are always on a two-hour delay. A not-so-emergency podcast to celebrate, to discuss, to review the long-awaited and finally agreed-upon contract extension for Zach Wheeler. Zach gets a boatload of change. He gets an average annual value of $42 million for three additional years that will carry him through 2027. No opt-outs. 10-5, no trade clause rights kick in later this year. He is, presumably, going to be a Philadelphia Philly for the remainder of his playing career. Joining me, as always, The Athletic's Matt Gelb, who was first on the scene with the terms of the deal earlier today. Matt, hello. How are you?
It's a lot of money.
A little bit higher than you thought. So you weren't quite as on with this contract as you were the NOLA contract, where you set a prediction benchmark for the rest of time, getting that within $500,000. Yeah, 3 years tacked on to 2024. So 5, 6, and 7, 25, 26, 27, $42 million a year. It looks to be spread out evenly over those 3 years. And the thought now is that with the top of their rotation locked in for the foreseeable future, the Phillies have a defined window. This is it. These next 2, 3, 4 years, if you squint, are it. This is where the push has to happen. And this core group of guys is either going to get it done or they'll just be very good. That almost feels like the pressure is starting to mount a little bit, don't you think?
A little bit. I mean, I don't know if it's like, this is it. I mean, I think, and I'm currently, you know, headbanging my way through a story about this, but yeah. I think this lines up with how they're trying to look at the organizational picture, the bigger picture as a whole. And that is, you're trying to get a lot of this current group, you know, through 2026 ish, you know, before you really need to start getting an infusion of younger talent. That probably needs to happen in 2026. And then in 2027 as well. But, I think there are a lot of good reasons to do this Wheeler deal. It's definitely more than I thought it would be. I don't know that it matters. This is like, I know, true. Like we've discussed this before, like we were talking about the Whit Merrifield deal. It's like, well, if he was worth six or, you know, and you give him eight, it's like, who cares? Well, this is a lot of money. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 42 a year, which is the fourth highest AAV ever in the sport. It's a huge number, but, because it was on a 3-year deal, because it's on a guy who they have actual reasons to point to and say, we think this guy is going to pitch well into his mid-30s, and we have reasons to believe and things to point to, and there's a lot of things to like about how he's worked with the athletic training staff, the strength staff, with the pitching staff, and all these staffs have remained intact, and that is a big reason behind, you know, why they've started to become successful as an organization, is they're not changing these people every year. Which is something they were doing every year, basically. Right. So I think there are some larger ramifications to this contract that I'm trying to get to, and I'm not doing a good job of verbalizing that. But I think the immediate for me is that the 2025 payroll is going to be enormous.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably the 1 year where they go into the third threshold, which would have draft implications, right? I mean, their draft pick would move back, I think, 10 spots. Mm-hmm. You know, if they sign a free agent with a qualifying offer, they'll have some pretty severe draft and international pool penalties. That's for later, I guess. But I do think that this lines up with how they're viewing these few years. But I don't think it's like, you know, championship or bust next year's and then we're just going back into a rebuild. Like, I do think that because they've made investments in some of these core players beyond the next 3 years, that there's reason to believe they can try to, you know, make this thing, and I'm using a word that, you know, baseball people love, and that's sustainable. And it's word. it's not always going to be sustainable with like this kind of payroll. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
But for now, I mean, this is the path they've chosen. It's pretty much their only path, right? So they will continue to throw money at it. And let's say he has another Zach Wheeler type year, maybe even a little less than, you know, value than he had last year in 2024. You know, what does he get on the open market, Paul? I mean, he probably gets more than 42 a year, right?
Well, I mean, the thing we were talking about just before we hit record was looking at it in comparison to Jacob DeGrom, right? Like, this AAV is a couple million dollars above what Jacob DeGrom got. And you have to think, just with the way the market is going, and good for the players, they deserve that big, you know, piece of the pie here, because baseball is making a lot of money lately, that if he had another Wheeler year, well, of course, especially with the whole open market thing going on here, where you're not, you know, you're not locked in exclusively to talking with one team. You can, you know, if you have a good agent, drum up more interest and all that stuff. It doesn't always work. And we can see that happening now with, you know, guys like Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, and all of that still hanging out here on the open market in early March of 2024. So there's always a risk involved, but sure, this is clearly one of the top, you know, if you're being conservative, top 10 starting pitchers in the game right now. He's elite. He is a top tier guy. He is a capital A ace. And you got to pay a lot of money to keep one of those guys around. I think what's interesting is that, and it came out a little, it was teased out a bit during the presser that he had earlier this morning, is that it was never a goal. It was never a focus or an intent to get one of these deals that stretches out over 5-6 years, even. Right? Something that would have taken Wheeler late into his 30s, like later into his 30s, potentially even broach 40. You know, we talked about how he's got a relatively small, maybe isn't the right word, but the mileage isn't as intense as it can be with somebody who's reaching his mid 30s as a starting pitcher here in the majors. And with all of that being considered, you just have to think that a lot of teams would be interested in an arm of that caliber being available, especially if he was only going to seek out a 3-year deal, right? Maybe a fourth if some other team presented a better situation. I just like that all the dominoes seem to work in favor of the Phillies here with this deal. And what I mean by that is, first of all, you get the deal done, which everybody was rooting for. Everybody likes this. The number is big, but I think we're all kind of getting accustomed to seeing big numbers on some of these AAVs. And with a player like Wheeler, who's incredibly popular around here, it's just kind of like, okay, yeah, sure, good. Got it done. 3 years. Let's go. But the fact that it is only 3 years, the fact that you're not tying a roster spot to, but I mean, it's a risk. Any pitcher into their late 30s is a risk, but you're not tying a roster spot late into, you know, a 36, 37, 38 year old Zach Wheeler, where the risk of injury goes up, the risk of ineffectiveness goes up. Yeah, it happens with baseball players. So I like that all of this came together. It works for everybody. They got the deal done. You're not waiting until free agency. You have a shorter term deal, which is apparently what Wheeler wanted, and it works for the Phillies window. It's hard for me not to like basically everything about this right now.
Right. As long as it doesn't stop them from, you know, future spending, you know, not, I'm not talking about in 2024, but I'm more talking about, you know, when this extension kicks in next year, 2025, 2026. And, you know, it might give them some pause and like another massive contract. I don't know that we'll see one. But I do think there's enough appetite to, you know, at least in 2025 to go, you know, pretty deep into the luxury tax for that 1 year, knowing that, you know, after 25, you've got Real Muto and Schwarber off the books. Mm-hmm. After 26, you have Castellanos, Walker, Bohm off the books. You know, some of the relievers in those years come off the books. So, like, you know, obviously, like, those, these are players that will have to be replaced, and some of that replacing is going to have to come from within, you know, within from the farm system. And I think, again, that's, that to me is just, you know, really underscored here on a day like this, is like, they need, you know, in a couple of years, they really need to start delivering their player development and the drafting side. But I tried to hint at it, like, earlier in the spring, I think, like, when I first wrote the, you know, maybe the first day of spring training, wrote about Wheeler, and it's like, you know, sort of hinted at that the short term, you know, sort of avenue was something that was very realistic. That was something the Phillies favored and something that, Zach Wheeler really wanted. And it was interesting to hear him talk today, because, he sounded like a guy who, will pitch for the next 4 years and that'll be it. Hmm. And even after so, like, B.B. Abbott, who's his agent, he's now at Wasserman. They bought B.B.'s agency a few years ago. He was talking to a bunch of reporters, including Jason Stark from The Athletic, who was helping me out because Jason's in Clearwater. I am not. And one of the things he said while Jason was over there listening was that, like, you know, B.B.'s like, I can see Zach winning a Cy Young in his last year and walking away. And that aligns with everything I've heard, is that Wheeler was looking at, I mean, even like, I think 2 years extension, like, I think he was looking at 2 years at really? Initially, and maybe with a higher number, and Philly's like, yeah, like, you know, like the number like three probably makes more sense for us. And, you know, we can probably get to a number that we can all agree on. You know, Wheeler mentioned a few times in a press conference, he doesn't want to pitch when he's old, which I don't know what that means. I turned 37 tomorrow. And so now I'm really feeling, old. Zach.
That's thank right. You. Yeah.
I think he's a guy who, is really gonna, he's not gonna hang out. Like, if his body, if he can't pitch well or perform like he thinks he should perform, and his body is not allowing him to, he's not going to hang on. And I think that's why he was looking at the shorter term deal. And I agree with you, Paul. I think this makes sense really from all the sides. But it's interesting to hear a guy be so open about that. And I think it's cool to hear him, you know, really know himself. Like, he knows what he wants. He just had a baby girl last week, you know, that's three kids. And I think his oldest is about four or five now. So he kind of, you know, he knows what he wants. And, like, I think he's just so happy about, like, how he's been able to unlock a different version of himself, you know, with the help of their training staff and the pitching staff and the strength staff. And does that guarantee, you know, a really good next 4 years? No, of course not. But I think it's a decent bet to make. And this is where pitcher contracts are heading, especially guys in their mid-30s. I mean, you know, everyone's like, well, he's not Scherzer or Verlander. No, he's not. But those guys sign those deals in their late 30s, early 40s. And Wheeler is not that right now. And I don't know if that makes it a better or worse bet than those two guys, because both of them are Hall of Famers and Zach Wheeler is not. But, hey, you know, like, I think we can all agree on this. Like, starting pitching is expensive. Starting pitching is hard to develop. Winning without quality starting pitching is almost impossible. And, you know, this is something they felt like they had to do, and it's hard to disagree with it.
You know, this comes back to something we were echoing in the lead up to Aaron Nola's free agency last year, is that if you're not going to pay somebody, in that case, Nola, but if you're not going to pay somebody to do that particular job, you got to pay somebody else to do it. And it operates on a scale, right? You have your guys who make the league minimum or right around it, who are younger in their careers, who come up and maybe don't have the track record that somebody like Enola has to keep with this case. And you kind of get what you pay for there, right? The drop off, it typically lines up in what you can expect versus what you pay for. Doesn't always work out that way. There are guys on their, you know, rookie and pre-arb deals who smash things. I get that. But if the Phillies weren't going to re-sign Aaron Nola, they were going to have to fill that vacancy somewhere. A lot of their internal options, as we saw last year, kind of pushed themselves out of the running to have one of those pre-arb guys come up and take that spot, you know, whether it's injury or developmental or otherwise, those options just weren't really there. So the Phillies would have had to have gone out and spent, maybe it would have been on Sonny Gray. Maybe who knows, right? Maybe it would have been on Jack Flaherty. But like you talk about that caliber of arm.
Tell you who wouldn't be on and still won't be on.
Go ahead.
Blake Snell.
Oh yeah. No, I do like that.
I would not put a lot of stock into the recent report that the Phillies are interested. Yes, I guess they'd be interested in a 1-year deal. Again, I have not heard the Phillies, anyone from Phillies in a position to know, mention Blake Snell at all. Like I don't know if there's been like any interest from them in Blake Snell. I guess in a 1-year deal, maybe, but again, I don't think he's going to sign a 1-year deal, and this is beside the point.
Yeah.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, that was a, it's a nice thing to transition into because he is still out there, and the longer he lasts out there, I try and not talk myself into it necessarily, but try and find a way to be okay with it. If that were to happen, you know, right, he's just not a pitch. He's not, I said this to a couple other friends either just yesterday or 2 days ago. He's just not a pitcher I enjoy watching. Like his style of start, I just, apart from everything else, whatever the years would be, whatever his performance is, he can clearly get it done in a different way. But that way is not something I like watching, just apart from everything else. I'm sorry, Blake. I don't like the 13% walk rate on a, you know, a five and dive is how I put it.
Even beyond the aesthetics though, like we're seeing that there are types of pitchers, starting pitchers that teams will pay a lot of money for.
It's true.
And we're also seeing that there are types of starting pitchers that teams may not back up the truck for. And I think both him and Montgomery are fitting that description right now. And it's not, you know, it doesn't make them bad pitchers. I think they're both quality starting pitchers. But I think there are real reasons to believe that neither of them are going to like age the most gracefully or make the sort of impact, I guess, for lack of a better word, in a rotation that you would be, you know, commensurate with the money that you would have to pay them. So I think generally speaking, it's not good business to be giving out $298 million, which is what the Phillies have done in the last 4 months, to two starting pitchers in their 30s. Generally not a good business practice. It's not. Like, we know how pitching ages. It's unnatural to the human body. That's that. But I think as we've seen the sport evolve and now the premium that's being put again on quality innings and also the dearth of pitchers who are able to do that physically, we are seeing that there is a certain type of starting pitcher that is in high demand in the sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Wheeler fits that mold. And so does Nola.
He does. No, they do. And I think that's why you're seeing these numbers that they're getting. You know, it's exactly that. There is a new premium. You know, we all kind of watched as everybody tried to homogenize pitching roles a little bit, like push everything more toward the center. Starters' roles were getting a little bit shorter. There were some relievers who were getting stretched out a little bit more. It became less about a starter goes six, maybe seven. There's a setup guy, there's a closer. Like that kind of philosophy, it's gone, mostly. It's just not present right now.
What do you think it looks like in 3 years?
Well, that's a great question, right? And I've tried to think about what that older version of Zach Wheeler might look like, what role he could fill. Maybe he is not a starter in the third year of this new deal, right? That's an expensive price tag for a reliever.
Yeah, that would be bad.
I know, like it's not great, but like
that would be bad.
You know,
no, but I interject? Because I thought about this, and it's like, by the in year three of Wheeler's deal, you are hoping that Andrew Painter is Zach Wheeler, and you're hoping that Zach Wheeler is basically I'm not saying like that, like slotting in, like you're hoping that Andrew Painter is like year two or maybe year one, and you're hoping that Zach Wheeler is like year three,
yeah,
maybe year two, but I mean, like you know. Again, we don't know what Andrew Painter is going to be, and if he's an ace, that's, you know, that's amazing, because very few, you know, there aren't 30 in the sport. Like, not every team has an ace. Like, right. That's how I look at that label. There's, you know, far less than 30 in the sport right now. But, you know, you're trying to figure out, like, are you expecting Zach Wheeler in 2026 in 2027 to be Zach Wheeler right now? No, you're not. I mean, that would be totally unrealistic, but you're hoping that, you know, he is a still at least close to a top rotation pitcher, or at least a mid rotation guy. And is it expensive to pay for it? Maybe, but in 2027, I don't know, how much are we going to be paying starting pitchers?
Exactly. Like, it was funny how quickly Bryce Harper's deal looked like it was, you know, just dwarfed, right? How much of a bargain it looked like for different reasons. But at the time, you see 13,330 and you're like, oh my God, it's going to be forever before we see something that's going to put that in the rearview mirror. And then lo and behold, on this team alone, he's already down to, you know, he's already he's going to be the fourth highest AAV on the team. So the total number is still there, yeah. But yeah, like it's crazy. You know, I will say I'm not predicting Zach Wheeler will be a reliever at the end of his deal. That I was thinking things through. I just want to make sure my words are clear here. One guy who I kind of think he could follow in these footsteps, or at least it's a progression that I like and would be comfortable with, is Yu Darvish. They at least have a similar kind of label applied to their game. They're both power pitchers who have missed time with injury in the past, have battled, you know, some bouts of ineffectiveness, but as they've gotten into their 30s, have redeveloped their games in different ways, but have, you know, broadly speaking, gone through those changes. I bring that up because Darvish appears on Zach Wheeler's baseball reference page as one of his similar comps through age 33. And the guys ahead of Darvish on that list, Darvish comes in fourth on that ranked list. The guys that come in ahead of him, I don't really think Wheeler has all of those same characteristics. The first one was Kyle Hendricks, first of all, which they are not similar pitchers.
A little different.
Yeah. After that is Clay Buchholz, which if you look in the right places, I guess you could see that. Carlos Carrasco has some similarity, but Carrasco was just, I think he was a little bit too injured for this to really work. Darvish has all of those boxes, at least. It's not a circle. You don't overlap them and see a circle. There are some differences. But you look at Darvish missing a year earlier in his career. You look at how he battled a little bit of wildness earlier in his career and has turned himself really ostensibly into a control pitcher, amazingly enough, over the last four or so years. He's really been great about limiting the walks. His strikeout rates are beginning to slope down as he, you know, works through his mid-30s. But at the time, when he was coming off his age 33 season, you know, it was the shortened season, so make of that what you will. You could see some similarity here between Wheeler's numbers and Darvish's numbers. And as Darvish has aged, yes, he's moved to San Diego, which I'm sure has helped, but he's stayed modestly healthy. Last year wasn't great for that, but he did make 30 starts his first 2 years. The strikeout numbers are slipping a little bit, but the walks haven't suffered, and he's not getting absolutely crushed with the home runs. It's not the dominant Darvish from early in his career. It's a different Darvish, but in a way that's still effective. Now, San Diego is going to be paying him a lot longer. It's a different contract situation. If you want to talk about money, I think things diverge a little bit there. But if we're looking at similar pitchers by performance, and again, this is a rough comparison, that is a slope I would be fine with Wheeler gliding down. If he's going to decline, that's a good way to do it. That's one example.
Yeah.
They're just tossing that out.
I don't know. There's like not a lot of comps for Wheeler. Like, it is such an unusual arc for him, right? I mean, because you look at innings pitched, you know, through age 33 seasons, and man, he compares so favorably to so many different guys, you know, top of the rotation guys we've seen, you know, in the last 20 years, right? And, you know, Madison Bumgarner had almost like twice as many innings pitched as Wheeler through his age 33 season. And this is, you know, through his age 32 season. And then this past year was Bumgarner's age 33 season, and he's done.
That's it.
So there are just, you know, I mean, I did the comp in my story. I mean, I think he has like 1,000 less than Halliday did at this point in his career. And yes, there's like, you see Wheeler learning to pitch with a little less velo at times, but then he can still, you know, reach back and get it, especially in big games and big spots. And, you know, Dave Dombrowski numerous times, you know, during a news conference, say referenced, you know, about no one else being a better big game pitcher right now in the sport. And that might be a little hyperbolic, but we've seen, you know, what Wheeler does when he, you know, when the moment gets bigger. And, you know, that's something worth paying for. It's not everything, but it's something. And I want to make clear, like the Painter stuff, like, you know, we don't know, we just don't know, but
yeah,
you know, that's part of this equation here is like, they do expect him to be, you know, a really good major league starting pitcher, and, you know, he'll be on some kind of innings limit in 2025, you know, because he'll have essentially missed two full years of pitching. So, you know, you really feel like you're not pulling off the training wheels until 2026, but that timing is okay. Especially since, you know, you have Ranger Suarez under club control through 2025. You have Taiwan Walker signed through 2026. You now have Christopher Sanchez under club control for another 4-ish years, maybe more than that, 5 years. So you have some inventory, and obviously you have Nola locked up for 7 years. You're just trying to extend this window a little bit. But you're hoping that there isn't as dramatic of a drop off as we saw in 2012 and 2013, right? I mean, yeah, that's the goal here, is trying to avoid, you know, the total cratering of a franchise that we saw in the early 2010s. I mean, it's just, how do you avoid that? And I don't know if there's a good answer. I mean, the good answer is, like, you know, drafting and developing well. And, you know, it's not an organization known for that. So that this is, they're buying time. You know, I've viewed that the last year, this year, like, all this is like, they are buying time, and they don't have an aging team. You know, this roster is very much still in its prime. Yeah. It is expensive. It is older, but not too old. You're just trying to buy time for your development machine to try to do something. And well, in 2026 and 2027, they better have done something by then, or else it's going to crater.
Yeah. You know, and from a fan side of things, in looking at this team, looking what they're doing, how they're building the roster, the way they're going about some of these moves. Yeah, it does kind of call, you know, the early 2010s back to mind. I kind of get that. You throw a lot of money out at some of these free agents. You extend a couple of guys who are going to be, you know, well into their 30s over the course
three times contracts. 20 for Roy Halladay is like one of the best contracts.
Yeah, right. No, you, and just brief aside, you did mention that point about 900 to 1,000 innings fewer than Halladay has at this point of his career for Wheeler. It's wild to think about the different trajectories different guys' careers take. But from a fan perspective, right, in thinking about this and trying not to be like, oh, it's going to be deja vu, history repeating itself, and we're going to pay all this money, and if it doesn't work out, then it's going to be a waste. And I'm just like, I don't really buy that. I think what this team is doing right now and over these last couple of years is exactly what it should be doing with these players, because it's not a perfect analogy to the early 2010s team. It's a different situation, not just coming off of a World Series versus searching for one. It's not even that. The part about the team being on the youngish side of their primes, it's probably not even the right way to describe it, but you said it better than I did. This is not,
I mean, an they are. It's roster. Crazy, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I made that note, and I keep coming back to the stat. Honestly, no one gave it to me. Like, I found it by accident. It's not like this is like being force-fed from the Phillies, but, you know, they had the second fewest plate appearances to hitters 33 and older last year. And they were all by Josh Harrison. This year, Real Muto will play at age 33, but like, we're talking about, and I know it's a younger game. Like, trust me,
sure.
Fully aware. Like, it's clear that the game is trending younger every year. And there will be a premium put on the Phillies developing young talent, but we're not talking about an old team here.
Yeah. And I think that's what gives me hope about this window, right? Again, not our money. We're not the ones footing this bill. They're making enough money from all these, you know, deals and gate receipts and merch and all that other stuff. They got the revenue streams to handle this. It's not a matter of these deals eventually crippling the team or preventing them from making other moves. I just don't see that right now. It's more about knowing that this is the time. I realize that people can get a little antsy when the team didn't win it all and there's this much, you know, returning, you know, lack of turnover. There's this undercurrent. Maybe I'm just making something that isn't there, but I feel like I pick up on it where there's this growing level of being a little bit unsettled.
Squeamishness. I get it. I mean, we talked about this, man. Like it's fair to feel a little squeamish when, you know, the roster looks a lot like it did last year and they fell short.
Yeah. Yeah. But the simple fact of the matter is this is a really talented team. And I think if we were talking about almost any other division, maybe outside the NL West, that this would be a division title contending team. You know, I think the Braves are still out in front of them just because the Braves won a lot of games last year and didn't really take that big of a step back in the offseason. Simple math. There's a big gulf there, but this is a really good team. And I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, clear last year's win total, get into, you know, 92, 93. Obviously you need a lot of stuff to go right to win that many games, but the talent is there. I don't think anybody, you can't look anybody else in the face and be like, oh yeah, that's an 84 win team right there. No, of course not. 90 wins last year wasn't a fluke. So bringing back the vast majority of that roster while they're all still, you know, in their early 30s and not even universally so, of course that's fine by me anyway. And I have no reason to think that they can't do that again. And we've talked about this too, but parlay that with what if they get off to a better start in April and May than they've had the last couple of years, right? They won 90 games while being, what was it, 6 or 7 under after May last year. Like they turned on the Jets because they have the talent, and that's why you bring it back. That's why it made so much sense. So yes, do they have a shot at winning the division? It's a small one. Are they going to be in the playoffs?
It's bigger than small. Yeah. I mean, I think it's bigger than small.
Let's get into that then. Do you have a percentage you think? Like how close are they?
I think they have a 25% chance of winning the NL East.
That is bigger than I would say. Okay. 25. Where does that come from? Take us inside the mind here. How do we cross the gulf between what the Braves did last year at 104, the Phillies at 90, considering their respective offseason? Like how do we see that coming together?
6 months of better Phillies defense, significantly better Phillies defense, and 6 months of not so good, you know, not as good Braves health. That's kind of where I see it, I guess.
Okay.
Well, and yeah, not just because of the recent news about Ronald Acuña, just more to that, like, they really did not have to dip that far last year into their depth, the Braves, especially in a position player side. And we'll see, you know, they have assembled a really durable and talented group of position players, and we'll see.
It's true.
But I mean, like 25%, it's not a great, you know, it's not a huge chance. Like, I don't know. Like, I just don't think, like, I don't think any team should have, you know, like a 90% chance of winning their division going into a season. Maybe that's just where I stand. That's where I am philosophically. Like, I don't even think the Dodgers should have a 90% chance. I mean, I understand they're very good, but there's just so many different things that can happen.
That's true. Yeah, I get that. There's a very real, that's why they play the games element to all of this. But no, that's just that.
You never know. You never know what you'll see at the old ball yard.
See? No, that's good though. I like that there is that thought. Know. No, I mean, what you say is not something I can turn around and be like, that's ridiculous, because it's not ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like 20. I'm going out there and be like really going on a limb and saying the Phillies have a 25% chance of winning the NL East. I don't know. I mean, I think that's like, you know.
Yeah.
One last thing when I come back to the
wheel. Of course.
Just the last thing is like, I look at it this way. This is my final analysis. You know, you combine his last year on the old contract with the new one. It's 4 years, $149.5 million. And I wonder, like, how many teams would sign up right now for Zach Wheeler, mid-30s? 4 years and $149 million. And I think it's quite a few teams.
Yeah. So what would that be? That would be 37 million and change.
Coincidentally, just like a couple hundred thousand above Jacob DeGrom's number.
Yeah.
Wheeler's, who is still friend, you know, they're good friends. Wheeler and DeGrom, former teammates. Yeah. Very competitive.
Very interesting. It's always funny how taking that breath and taking a step back and looking at it from like a slightly higher point of view, when you think about it that way, you know, how many teams would do X, Y, and Z? You just slightly change the frame of things. And it's like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. you know, every team that would be serious about competing, I would think would be in line to go for four and 37, 38 for Zach Wheeler, where he is right now. Absolutely.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, when you're talking about the Darvish deal, like they're avoiding, you know, the late 30s and even into the 40s, which some of these pitchers have gotten paid for. And it's not always going to go well. It's probably not going to go well. And we don't know what's going to happen with this, but feels like something they had to do. It takes them out of the starting pitching market for next off season, which I think they're really happy about. It's going to be a good market, but it's also, we're going to see some big numbers again thrown around. So we'll see. This was, we said before the spring, this is the biggest piece of business they had this whole spring. And so now, like, it's time to end spring training, right? I mean, it's over, right? There's not three more weeks. It's done, right?
That's it. It's over. Nothing more to do. Everybody's good. Everybody's loose and limber. We can swim ahead.
Oh, it's not over. Oh, there's three more weeks.
Three more weeks. God. Yeah. So now all we have to do is grip onto our seats and hope everybody stays healthy. That's all that's left this spring. You know, watch Scott Kingery hit a few more home runs and the rest, you know, just hope everybody stays healthy. That's about it. I'm going to be down there this week. I'm excited to see everybody stay healthy. This is going to be cool.
Where are you going to, which games are you going to?
I'm going to three games. I am going to two Phillies games at BayCare. It'll be my first time at BayCare or Bright House or what have you.
It'll always be Bright House Networks Field to me.
Bright House Networks. And then I'm going to, because the Phillies are on the road in Bradenton, the last full day we're there, I'm going to stay in Dunedin and watch a Blue Jays Orioles game to round out the trip.
You don't want to go to Pirate City?
You know, I was looking at it. It's like, what is it? It's like an hour and a half drive or something like that.
It's about 45 minutes.
Hour drive.
It's fine.
It's
not called McKechnie Field anymore, but it is, it's a cool place. Really. Yeah. I think you made the right call.
Pirate City.
That's what their complex is called. Pirate City. Yeah.
Oh boy.
It's where the magic happens.
That's what they're swashbuckling good time. So I'm going to be down there over the weekend and I'm going to be checking some stuff out. I'm very excited. I've never been. It's a little father-son trip because my dad also has not been in at least 45, 50 years if he has at all. So good stuff. We're passing like ships in the night, you and I, but I'm excited to get down and check it out. Again, thank you for the reminder. Happy early birthday. Very cool. I turned 37 in January. I feel what you feel.
Just another year has passed, Paul.
Yeah, baby. We love the passage of time around these parts. Speaking of 2027, which is not a real year when we both turn 40.
Oh, God.
how's that a way to end? Great. More games to watch. Feel free to put it on as background. It's soothing. I find it soothing. I like spring games. They're great.
That's great. We didn't have time, and I won't do it to go on my Christian Pache rant, but that's good.
Leave it in the hopper. We'll talk about that next week after I get back, and we still won't have a video component, so you won't see how sunburned I am. We can talk about Chris Pache then. Hopefully by then he'll have had a couple more 105 mile an hour stingers, and we can add it to the quiver of arrows being used.
I hid an SPF 50 underneath my seat in the press box, so if you need it, just find a way to get up there.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that'll be a breeze. Thanks. thanks for letting me know. All right, I guess before we sign off here, you mentioned you were writing something up. We got a little more Wheeler analysis coming, hitting the pages of The Athletic soon.
Yeah, and I'm excited because Jason Stark's been working on something and, you know, just kind of putting, I think, in context to, you know, the first contract and now with the second contract. And he's talked to a lot of different people for it, and I'm excited to read that on Jason's end, and that'll be on The Athletic likely Tuesday morning. I'll have something up there later today. We're recording this Monday afternoon. It'll be up there later today, Monday. Just sort of like trying to figure out like the future ramifications, right? I mean, I think there's a lot to consider in the future. And I know that nobody really wants to talk about 2026 and 2027 right now, but it's just worth at least like thinking about and sort of tracing, you know, like what this really all means in the bigger picture. I mean, I think, next year's payroll is going to be a big one. 2025 payroll is going to be enormous. I mean, I think they already right now they have the highest payroll, like, you know, the money that they're paying to, you know, they've already guaranteed to players, I believe, is the highest number in baseball right now.
Giddy up.
Yeah.
At the risk of prolonging things again, because they're setting themselves off to smash through the even the third level potentially of the CBT, do you think they, dare I say the name, one particular now Yankee who's going to be a free agent?
Juan Soto? I mean, yeah. I don't know. I guess. Like, I've learned, I guess, not to rule them out of anything, but I don't know. That seems just so unrealistic.
I couldn't resist.
If he has a big year in pinstripes,
oh boy.
Right? Like, I mean, oh gosh, boy. Like, I feel like it would take a lot for him to not be a Yankee after that, right? I mean, like, it's just difficult to imagine. That doesn't mean they won't be in on him. I'm sure they will. And I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to discuss that.
Oh, that'll be great. Yeah. I can't wait to think about that all the time once November rolls around or whatever. Okay. But that's for later. For now, Zach Wheeler is staying put. The Phillies are taking care of another one of their own. A 3-year extension that'll cover the years 2025 through 2027. At $42 million a year. The top of the rotation is locked in. The team is locked and loaded. We're ready to go. Let's sim ahead these next 3 weeks, get everybody healthy, and let's kick this season off in style. Good stuff. Go check out Matt's story on the Wheeler signing. Look out for, as of this recording, his not yet published analysis hitting soon, along with Jason's piece. Got good stuff coming. Just because most of the moves are done doesn't mean the good content stops. I'm sorry. I shouldn't refer to your stuff as content. Your stuff.
I hate that word.
I know. I'm sorry. It's not content. this is content. This is great content. I hope you enjoyed. Thank you for sticking with us for another episode of Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer for The Athletic's Matt Gelb. That'll do it for us this time around. We'll catch you next week.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.